You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And a welcome in to a Tuesday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast. We, of course, weren't with you on Monday, so we are here with you on Tuesday. I'm Adam Friedman, and joining me on the other line is the newly credentialed member for the Indiana Pacers. He got to sit in the press box, got to go to the Kevin Pritchard press conference, got to talk to players after the game. If you were on Twitter, you might have saw his obnoxious laugh on some question to Victor Oladipo. It's Mr. Tony East, my lovely co-host. How you doing?
Vic was so funny, and Derek was standing right next to me at iPacers blog, and his video, you can hear me laughing, so annoying. I'm so mad about that.
And I thought to myself, wow, now everybody knows how I feel. See, there it is.
I can't help it. I have a giggle more than a laugh, but yeah, Victor was really funny. If you haven't heard his interview, well, I don't know if it was really an interview. If you haven't heard his locker room after the Knicks game conversation, it was really funny.
Yeah, they're all on Pacers.com, I believe, all the post-game stuff. I usually catch them.
It's a really good website. We need to plug them a little bit. They have cool shirts, too.
Yeah, I own one of their shirts. So
yes, you did.
Yeah. I own one of their shirts, thanks to my lovely girlfriend, Marina, who bought it for me for Hanukkah last year. So, but that's not important, so...
suck it, Marina. All right.
Well, we'll see if she can listen to it or not. That's not important, though. So in your first game credentialed, you also got to hear the comments from one of the few times a year the Pacers president of operations, Kevin Pritchard, come to talk to the media. It's after the trade deadline, of course, so that's a big moment. Kind of it's a dividing line this season between this, you know, midway point sort of. And so he come to talk to the media, and he basically, how long did he go for? 10, 15 minutes or longer?
Yeah, about 15 minutes. I missed the very, very start of it, but I got the last about 10 minutes of it. And it was his first time speaking since Media Day, which is why it was such a big deal.
Yeah, I mean,
he never does anything.
The general manager, Chad Buchanan, spoke on Fox Sports Midwest, I think, two weeks ago. But the top brass rarely talks to the media. They're not required to, like the players and coaches are. And so they kind of just come down and when there's big things happening. So the trade deadline was a big thing, so you can't answer some questions. But I thought he gave some good insight. He talked about how the Pacers, why they didn't make a move. He said six players, as Pritchard said, six players came to him and said they could do something special. I thought that was interesting. And he talked about Al Jefferson a little bit, which is kind of what leads me to my first question to you was, do you think I was thinking it was Al Jefferson for Kenneth Faried in a pick some kind. Do you think that was what was available, or you kind of were thinking something different?
Yeah, I think that's what it was. And I kind of talked to you about this beforehand just a bit, but I bet the snag was on the pick protections because, you know, with Paul Millsap out, Denver's record isn't amazing. I think they're like right on the cusp of the 8th seed in the West, and they might make the playoffs. They're a talented team, but, you know, I'm guessing the Nuggets wouldn't want to lose their first if they're in the lottery. So they probably put lottery protections on it, and Pritchard was not interested. I would guess that's how the negotiations went, because on paper, that trade makes a lot of sense. But with the lottery protections, you know, if you just get like a second, that's not worth it. So,
yeah, it probably was like one of those things that turns into like a 2 seconds or so many years. So let's say it's lottery protected for two seasons and it turned into 2 seconds, which is, when I was listening to Woj's podcast earlier last week, he was kind of saying that's how a lot of teams are trying to structure deals and not a lot of teams value the 2 seconds idea. So that would make sense. And it seemed like Pritchard really valued Jefferson, you know, for the leadership he brings. He's probably, now that they cut Wilkins, I don't know if he's the oldest guy on the team, but he's definitely one of the most experienced guys. He has some of the center skills that Miles can learn from. It just seems like, you know, you already paid him most of his contract. You're probably going to cut him at the end of the season, but you already paid him most of the way. Faried is kind of a bad contract. You're really adding him to a mix of guys who are playing really well, and maybe you don't want to screw that up. And so it seemed like it's just easier to keep Jefferson, keep things cohesive, and maybe he'll teach Turner still some things throughout the season kind of that way.
Absolutely. And, you know, like this is just one play to make an example of something he said, but that spin move on Joel Embiid he had really highlighted, you know, what he said when he was like, yeah, these younger guys just don't know how to guard my post moves. And there is value to him teaching that to Sabonis and Turner. And, you know, you can clearly see that they work. I mean, Joel Embiid's one of the best defensive centers in the league, and he just embarrassed him. So there's still something to him. And obviously veteran presence is like an unquantifiable something you spend money on. So he still has value, and he's a good guy to have around. And he, you know, I'm sure you're about to say this, but he's really thankful to still be here. You know, you heard him say thank you. So you know, it's good that he's still here, I think.
Yeah, and so this week I'm actually writing about Miles Turner, and there's been, you know, some hate on him for not improving, whatever it is. But if you watch old Jefferson and the way he used to play, there's a lot of things that Miles Turner doesn't do well that Jefferson used to do well that he can learn from. And I think that is something that's really valuable to the Pacers in the long run, looking at it. You know, if they're ever going to make that next leap, it's going to be because Turner becomes that kind of player that Jefferson was in his prime. And he can still learn from Jefferson for even if it's 3 or 4 more months. Jefferson can still teach him, you know, some of the post moves, some of the, you know, Turner's got is a better shooter than Jefferson, but he can do some of the same moves inside the lane when he's trying to get space and things like that. He actually has a better jump shot to be better at than Jefferson, who kind of throws off one-hand shots a lot. So it just things that they can teach him. And ultimately, I thought bringing Fareeden is such on the fringes of improvement that keeping Jefferson, if it even helps Turner, you know, get 5% better this year for 15% in the long run, it's worth it.
Yeah, and that's a good way to put it too, is like, I know Ben Falk, the cleaning the glass, he used to work for the Sixers and the Blazers. He talks about how, I forget if it was both of his teams or just one, but they analyze trades and like percent chance that it helps your franchise. And, you know, just trading Al Jefferson really for Kenneth Fareeden to first really give you that much of a percent chance of helping your franchise versus the percent chance that he helps Turner improve, you know, they're probably about the same. So worth keeping him.
Yeah. And if you look at the Pacers with Robinson due to return some point, we don't know when, probably after the All-Star break, they really have a playoff rotation set. You really can't play more than 8, even 9 guys in the playoffs. And so if Robinson is really the 9th guy, they don't really have a spot for Fareed, even if they bring him in. They're paying him so much money, and he'll basically be in the same spot that Jefferson's in right now, where Jefferson is okay with saying, I'm not going to play in the playoffs. I don't care. I know I'm here in the regular season to like basically give guys rest at times, you know, or if an injury happens, but he not expected to play in the playoffs. While Fareed, it seemed like from some of the quotes he'd given that he sort of wanted to leave Denver because he thought he could be better than he is at Denver and wanted another shot, which I'm not sure he'd be given the opportunity, at least this year with the Pacers, if that happened.
Oh, I 100% agree. You know, unless you're for some reason, like rebounding is going to make your team have a valiant comeback. There's nothing Fareed really offers. That's like so valuable to success. And he's an excellent rebounder. Like I'm not trying to diminish that value of him, but like there's not a situation in the playoffs where you need like a rebounder on the court that is that like Sabonis and Turner, one of them is going to be out there, right? So it's not like Fareed's like the hugest boost in that scenario.
Yeah. So then one more thing Pritchard said that there's a couple more things, but one more thing I like that he definitely talked about was, we didn't really talk about this the show when we were doing our prep, but it's how we talked about how the Pacers have overcome kind of like small adversity throughout the season. And I thought that kind of shows their chemistry in some sense, which you also don't want to disturb with the trade. He talks about how they take pictures of players on the bench and see how they're kind of reacting to when, you know, the ups and downs of a season. And if you watch the Pacers, no matter who's in, who's out, whether it's like Lance is out in the last 6 minutes or Collins on the bench last minute or Turner's on the bench for Sabonis or whatever it is, the guys seem always engaged and happy to be out there, and like the team's winning. They're just happy about winning. They don't really care who's playing, which is, you know, it's a kind of a complete like distinction to what's happened in Cleveland the past, you know, 2 months to, you know, other teams. You know, when you have the kind of chemistry these guys are having and are having fun out there, it can really lead to some playoff success. And so like even the Wizards sometimes don't have that same kind of like enthusiasm, and it sort of is good they didn't want to break it up.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, players talk, right? So there's going to be free agents who talk to players and say, hey, am I going to have fun playing in Indiana? And it sounds like, given that no one wanted to be traded, and like you said, they all look like they're having fun, you know, they're going to say, yeah, it's awesome. You know, we get to have fun. You get to play with Lance Stevenson, Victor Oladipo. Like, it's just, you know, they're going to talk and it'll help. And yeah, now they know that, like, the front office is loyal to that, too.
And it'll help because if you watch the Pacers, they're not this team reliant on, like, they're relying on Vic, but they're okay with having other guys have kind of big scoring nights, and nobody seems mad about that. And that's good when you bring in a new player who knows that I can go for 30. They'll give me my 15, 20 shots if I'm on fire, and nobody's going to be pissed about it. Versus other teams where the guys want to get their shots.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So what was the other one we wanted to hit? I'm blanking on it.
There's kind of two. I'm going to blend these together, kind of. This is more of a rant, and it's all speculation from me. And he, you know, this is a press conference, right? So the point is both to tell you what's happened and to, like, have a PR win for the team. So Kevin Pritchard said that 6 players came to him and said, please don't trade us or don't trade away anybody. We like what we have. We want to prove that we are good enough to make the playoffs, blah, blah, blah. I totally believe that that happened. And I think that's fine. And I think that's really cool of the players to do. And I'm glad that he, you know, respected that sentiment and said, okay, let's go for it. But I also, you know, I can't say for sure if it affected his decision-making, but I think it's the mark of a bad GM / president of basketball operations to not make a trade because of emotion. You know, if it's going to make your team better in the long run, you should do it. But again, I don't know for sure if that trade existed. So that's not a knock on him. That's just like me musing. But the thing that kind of is the PR side of it is he said, you know, all these players come up to him and said, hey, don't trade us. But then he also said right at the end, the only three trades that they were seriously considering were all trades where they sent or they didn't send out a player, but they took in a player. So something like the Bulls Noah Vonleh trade where they just got Noah Vonleh in cash for nothing. You know, the Pacers could have done that, or, you know, like Kyle Singler in a second round pick in cash or something like that, where they just get a player and they give away nothing and they get an asset. You know, those were the only things that he said they were seriously considering. So it doesn't sound like he was even seriously considering trading players away, but it is a really cool story that all the guys don't want to get traded away. And, you know, it's cool that he stood pat given that too.
Yeah. I can't believe I forgot about this in our pre-show meeting where you tone it down for the show, but I understand what you basically were saying, that it was a PR move by Pritchard. He went out there and talked to the media and basically get his guys, the guys on the team, to think, listen, I was never going to trade you guys. I listened to you. I believe in you, whatever. And it's a savvy move by a veteran NBA guy to basically, you know, if I'm a Pacer player and I saw that press conference, I'm going to think, wow, my GM, my president has my back. I want to keep playing well. Let's get this team to 45, 48, 50 yeah. wins, whatever it takes. Let's go make a playoff run, which it's a savvy move by him. And that's probably why he came out, for probably the only time you'll hear him speak to the media between now and the end of season press conference, basically.
And he might be telling the truth. You know, I could just be blowing smoke, but that's just my, you know, my two cents there is that, like, it just happened to work out for him that there were no trades for the guys who said that. So he's like, perfect. Now I can look like I'm the nicest guy ever. And it worked out great for him. So, and this isn't a knock against anybody. It's just my kind of interpretation of the events.
I would almost bet too, if we went around to the teams that didn't make moves, like in the playoffs, like Toronto or Washington, whatever, and their GM's probably saying something similar to that range. Yeah. We don't want any moves, things like that. I'm sure they would, but it's not a knock on the GMs or presidents, whatever, whoever's saying it, because it's probably somewhat true, but it's also a motivation tactic in the same sense.
Exactly. So it's a great PR move, you know, and maybe I'm wrong, and I'll totally concede to that. Because the only way I'd have beef with it is if he didn't make a trade because of emotion. But it doesn't sound like that's the case. It just sounds like, you know, he just did a really good PR interview and had a good trade deadline.
Yeah, and we got to remember, Pritchard has been doing this a long time. He's been doing it a very long time. So he knows how to, you know, he knows when he has a team that he thinks has good chemistry. I mean, he's seen it all, I'm sure. So he probably thought, you know, I've seen these guys. They look like they're having fun. I don't want to disturb that. I want to be on their side. And I'm sure it's going to work out. I'm sure it's like kind of working out, and hopefully it'll work out for them in the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's how it works out in the playoffs, is you get guys who buy in, and they clearly want to prove that they're good enough, or else they wouldn't have gone to him and said something like that. So that's my only takeaways from that. And really good. I'll give Pritchard credit. He did a really nice job, and he was very candid and honest. And I did remember he also said something about how he liked that Darren and Bojan are outplaying what he expected from them, and it's going to make it, you know, more probable that he picks up their team options. He didn't say for sure, but he seemed very confident that they would, but we can't say for sure without more information that we'll get the rest of the season.
Yeah. He also said something about he could clear up to $50 million in cap space. So I think
he won't, but he's mindful that he could.
Yeah. So one question before we switch to our next kind of topic, who do you think the six players were? So it was definitely Bojan. He said,
I'll say for sure.
Jefferson, I think, was the other one. Maybe
I think that's the only three I can say for sure are Bojan, Darren, and Al. I think Darren to me is the biggest lock, because he has like the past troubles and he's having a career year, and he's probably like, please don't like punish me almost for having such a good season. You know,
if I'm going on a limb and just guessing, I'm going to guess. So those guys are probably, Bojan's probably not a leader of the team, but those two guys are definitely leaders. Bojan's probably kind of, but I'm guessing Thad was probably the fourth one, because he is definitely like the facto leader of the team. And then you know, you take your pick of Lance, Corey, and Vic for the rest. I mean, I don't know. I don't, maybe Miles spoke up, but I feel like Miles and Domas are so young, they don't really know they have the ability to speak up yet, versus some of the other guys have been in the league long enough. They know they can talk to the president, the GM, and let them kind of know their hearts and feelings. I feel like Vic probably had to, because Vic is the best player and they kind of were going to build around him, but I don't know.
And what he didn't say is he didn't differentiate between someone saying, don't trade me, and don't trade anyone, you know, because that if he had said don't trade anyone, that would change who I say it is. But if it was don't trade me, then I can only think of like four guys. So
yeah, I mean, it was those three guys, and Thad was kind of the fourth maybe to be traded. And they probably talked about his extent, his option, and was going to pick it up and things like that. That was probably in there.
Exactly. But we'll never know that stuff. It's just it's the inner workings.
Yeah, maybe, you know, Tony, if you keep going to those media days, you can press them at some point. End of season press conference, you can just, hey, who are the six players? You mind telling? Like, see if we'll probably, I mean, I don't know. Nobody probably care, but you could ask and still find out.
We know for sure Bojan and Al were two of them because Al said, thank you.
And he said Bojan. I forget when somebody said that Bojan said that. It might have been in the press conference, or was it after the game?
I don't remember what it was, but I heard that too.
Yeah. Well, anyways, we want to move on. So Darren Collison going to be out until the end of the All-Star or after the All-Star break. Hopefully he'll be back that Friday after the February 23rd game. But in his place, Corey Joseph has started now three games. I think Joe Young started one. They've both been playing significant minutes. We wanted to give a little check-in on them. So far, you know, definitely Joe Young is playing way above what we thought he could against the Wizards.
Way above.
So Tony actually pressed me with a question before in this game. Would Joe Young start on the Knicks? And I said, probably not yet, but he definitely play rotation minutes. So that was kind of the start of this. He had that 17-point game against the Wizards, and then he had the 11-point game against the Knicks. So he's been playing.
More importantly, in 71 minutes of Joe Young over the last three games, he's a plus two. That's huge.
Yeah, that is huge. The fact that he's not a negative on the court. And he really seems like he's knocking, like he knocks down a lot of his 3-point shots, and he has a lot of confidence in it too, where he gets the ball and he's willing to just shoot. He's not like hesitating, which can sometimes be the death of shooters. He just gets the ball in a good spot and shoots.
Exactly. This is what they drafted Joe Young to be. A second rounder is a guy that you hope can plug and play in a situation where he has a role, and his is clearly just score, and he's doing a good job of it. So that's how he stays in the NBA.
Yeah, and so Joe Young's play really contrasts to the way Corey Joseph has played on offense, at least. Now, I want to give Joseph some credit against the Celtics. His defense on Kyrie at the end of that game was incredible and extremely important in them winning that game. So I don't want to say Corey Joseph has been just, you know, a negative, because I think, you know, in a vacuum on the season, Joseph has been asked basically, you're the guy in the end of game is going to guard. If there's a really good point guard out there, you're going to guard him. And he's done that also. He's guarded them really well. He's let Vic kind of not have to guard the best guard on the other team. But he's been shooting pretty bad over this stretch.
Really bad.
And it's been, you know, it's been hurting them in some sense because he's not really a threat. And Collison, who is like, I mean, his efficiency stats, Collison is like in the top 10 point guards in the NBA, efficiency-wise and offensive rating and things like that. And Joseph has just sort of been complete bleh.
Yeah, he's 3 for 16 over these three games since he's become the starter. And, you know, against the Wizards, he was 2 for 7. His defense was fine, I guess, but with Satoransky just so much taller than him that he struggled with that. And then he did a nice job on Kyrie, like you just said, and he was great against the Knicks point guards. But like we just said, those Knicks point guards aren't too much better than Joe Young, so it's not like a crazy feat. His big problem against the Knicks was foul trouble. He had 5 of those things. He was not happy about it when I asked him about it. He said they were all ticky-tack. But he's done a good job on defense, and that's why he's able to be effective. Like, he's still a +6 in his minutes over those three starts, too. It's just that, you know, when the shot's not falling, no one's really guarding him, and it's harder for everyone else. Like, I think Vic's struggles over the last couple of games shooting has kind of been a product of Joseph's struggles, too.
Yeah, also, Joseph bit the bullet once on a foul that was clearly on Turner or should have been on Turner. And it helped keep Turner out of foul trouble. So, I mean, he did. That's a positive. But what scares me about Joseph is not the fact that he's shooting the bat. It's that he just isn't shooting the ball. Yeah. Like, he didn't shoot a single three against the Knicks. I know his time and we played 21 minutes, so it screwed with things. But he didn't shoot a single three. And it seems like in the position of the Pacers point guard with the starters, you're going to get at least one or two open threes just in the flow of a game, because the way Peter moved the ball and the way Vic cuts the rim and things like that, you just get the ball for an open three. And he didn't even take one, which means he's not confident. Luckily, they only probably have one more game of him starting, and it's against the Nets, who are not that good, which we'll preview later. But it's worrisome that he's not shooting the three at all.
Yeah, it definitely is. And he had a few open ones in the Knicks game where he just was not going to shoot it. And I guess, like, it's not the worst thing ever if you're not confident to not shoot, but you got to shoot when you're open. Like, you just can't shy away from that. And I can't get on his head and help because it's not my place, but you want him to shoot when he's open, no matter how bad he's been shooting recently.
Yeah, and it actually reminds me of that one game where Bojan didn't shoot the ball at all, and then he sort of got over the hump, and that's kind of what we're going to talk about next is Bojan, who has now made – surgeon. So Tony is living it up after what was probably the most miserable stretch from December, two months of just like, I mean, he couldn't hit the ball. He couldn't make a shot. It was ridiculous. I mean, I'm thinking of like, he couldn't throw the ball in the ocean. That's how bad he was. He finally, on the end of January, he finally put together a really good game. And since then, he has just been on fire. He's really actually helped make up for the fact that Vic has been shooting so bad from three by shooting 50% over the last, what is it, the six-game stretch.
50% from three, 54% from the field.
20 points per game. Yeah, it's been incredible.
20 points per game over that span. He has been awesome, awesome, awesome.
The only thing that worries me about this is the way he needs to play in 2 months. You know,
agreed.
I get it. Winning games right now is good. They're in the playoff race and they're competing. It's going to be a tight one probably because Detroit's kind of come back into the playoff race. So now it's nine teams once again. But, you know, if he shoots like this for a month and then loses it again in March and doesn't have it in April, it's not going to matter at the end of the day. So hopefully, you know, whatever it is, he'll have gotten over and can keep this going through at least the end of April because then they have a shot at winning a playoff series. But I have to give him props. I mean, he has been just playing incredibly well. He has, like, he's going to the rim again. You know, he's stepping an inch, like a foot back off the three-point line and draining it. I mean, he has just not been afraid. It might be just because teams have sort of like thought he was playing so bad they stopped guarding him, so he's not getting better looks, but whatever it is, he's back.
Yeah, Nate, well, Jim Aiello asked about it, and Nate said that a couple things. One is that he wasn't getting his legs into his shot for a while, and they had him sit out that one practice and just ice bath the whole day, and ever since then he's been awesome. And another thing he said is he's doing a better job getting open. And there was one possession that stuck out in my head where he was open on the left wing on a fast break. He caught it, and the shot was kind of there, but not really there. So he shot faked, took a dribble, passed the top of the key, cut all the way over to the other wing, and was wide open and caught it and nailed the three. And I was like, that was beautiful. Like, he just manipulated everybody with his movements and canned the open three. And Nate's right. He's getting open, and he's making the shots. So, you know, hopefully it keeps up for forever, but, you know, especially in April.
I really hope then they have like a scheduled ice bath for him, like right around the April range. If that really is what I mean, that could be it really for sending him a shooter with legs is like get him rest, you know, give him a practice off every month, you know, right. Just let him recover. They better have a planned one for April just in time. I mean, you know, now he's going to have 9 days off after going to the All-Star break. Hopefully that helps him get his legs back too a little bit. But I don't know what to say. I'm just extremely happy that he's playing so well because he's been playing so well recently because he's been playing so well. And you look at the schedule coming up. I mean, after the All-Star break, I mean, they've got the next five games are all probably winnable games. And, you know, they can make a real run at winning like seven of the next eight or nine games. And really
their next four games are the Nets, the Hawks twice, and the Mavs. They can easily win four of those.
They could easily, then they play like the Wizards and Bucks, who they're on the level with. You know, they might not be better than them, but they're on the level. And they almost beat the Wizards when they didn't have Darren Collison or Victor Oladipo. So,
yeah.
it there's a real chance for the Pacers to make like a, you know, with, I think, what are they, 32 and 25 now, or 33 and 25? I'm trying to.
They could get to 40 wins before 30 losses, reasonably.
Yeah. Or they could get, I mean, they could get close to 50 wins, is what I'm trying to get.
I don't know about that.
They'd have to win, I think, 18 of their last – I did it at one point, 18 of the last 27 games or 25 games.
It's not, which, like, impossible, but it's hard.
Yeah, it also depends on – they play the Warriors twice. If the Warriors are trying still then, there's a chance this team can get close. I'm not saying they're going to win, but get close to, like – they're on pace for 46 right now, so get to, like, 48. That would be really impressive, and that'd probably get them a top five seed, which would be nice.
Probably four at that point. Yeah, it'd be awesome. And Bojan shooting's a big part of that. And, sorry, this is super random, but – another thing he said about that, I was like, we tied it into when we were asking. I asked about this first. I'm so mad because ESPN wrote about it a bunch today, but it was on everyone's heads. Was, you know, with all the injuries, you know, does it seem like the All-Star break's like farther away because of that 2 weeks extra? And is that causing fatigue and all that stuff? And Nate pretty much just said no. And the Pacers have a really good medical staff, so I totally believe him. And that, you know, it just probably feels a little longer for the players. Maybe that's a leg thing. But if the ice baths work, keep doing the ice baths.
Yeah, so then, did you get any information on Glenn Robinson? It's just you talking about injuries and
like no, that. No one asks about him anymore.
All right, fair enough. We assume, right? We assume he's gonna come back after the All-Star break. Maybe that first game
at home. I guess first game back against the Hawks. Okay. I think it's Atlanta actually.
So maybe they wait and bring back on a home game. I think Dallas is at home.
I think that they are at. Sorry, they are home for the Hawks. So never mind. I bet it's that one.
You messed me up. I knew they were home for one of the games. I just couldn't remember. Yeah.
It's home Hawks at Mavs at Hawks. So close out the month. So
The last topic we should probably hit before we.
Last game against the Nets. We don't have to talk about them again.
Yeah. So before that, we should probably talk about Vic's recent shooting slump and part of it too is Tony and I had a lively debate in our text message about whether Vic outplayed Kyrie Irving in the past two games. I tweeted that out and said Vic's played better than Kyrie both times, or two of the three times they played this year. Vic didn't play the first time the Boston Celtics played the Pacers. So it ended in me calling Tony stupid, I'm pretty sure. But it was great.
I stopped responding.
He did stop responding. I said, no, that's just stupid. But so Vic clearly outplayed Kyrie in the last most recent game on Saturday. 100%. Vic was incredible. 35 points, basically closed out the game with that amazing layup where he basically dragged the entire way and then flips it up off the glass.
He got fouled so hard too. No call.
And they didn't call, which is ridiculous. But in the game they played back in, I think it was December now, maybe it was even November. I'm trying to remember. 18th. December 18th, infamous Bojan game. Vic had 38 points. Kyrie had 30 points. So they both played incredibly well. I just thought Vic outplayed him that game. You know, I don't really want to get into debate about it, but I more want to talk about is where does Vic rank among shooting guards, either in the league or guards in the East right now? So I sort of like pulled the Eastern guys. And if you look at it, you know, there's DeRozan, Beal, Kyrie, and Vic are probably the four best guards in the East.
This year.
Yes. Lowry is kind of on the fringe, but probably not quite on those guys' level. And if you look at it, he's probably on the same offensive level as a slight drop on offensive level to DeRozan and Kyrie, but his defensive stats are so much better than those two guys, it might make him the best guard in the East.
So I think the top tier is six guards. I'd add two guys you didn't have. I would have Lowry in there. You did bring him up. You know, I think he had a rough start, and like with Jeff Teague last year, sometimes the rough start is hard to get over mentally for a lot of people. And then I'd also have Kemba in that group. He's been really good this year. He's a deserved all-star. He probably should have been in it the first time and the second time and the third time. So it's crazy that it took so many injuries to get him in. But I think that's my top six, and the ordering is really hard. You know, Kyrie's skills make him close to the top, but he's not very good on defense. But he's just so efficient and good scorer. And then DeRozan finally having a three-point shot makes him really good. But Oladipo's probably the best defender of that group. Maybe Lowry. Actually, no. Lowry and Oladipo are the two best defenders of the group. So there's a case to be made for sure that he's the best. But it's like they all have different skill sets, and it makes it really, really hard to decide.
Yeah, and I actually think Kyrie and Vic are the best two, like, you can compare together, because they have a little bit different skill sets, but they also do a lot of the same things of – they're great kind of three-point shooters. I think Kyrie's a better three-point shooter, but they're both guys that go to the rim a lot and try to make plays around the rim. And just watching Vic this year, I see a little bit of, like, the handles that Kyrie has where he can, like, he'll be going full speed at the rim and then pull up and hit a layup. I mean, it's a little different than Kyrie. He uses kind of a shake and bake kind of style versus Vic is sort of like a speed and kind of pulls up in the last second on guys. But they are more comp. I think DeRozan's sort of out there because he's a totally kind of different player than those two.
Yeah.
But another guy you guys probably mentioned was John Wall, where I think he's kind of
would be better if he was playing, but he's not.
His injury and stuff like that has hurt him. I think him and Lowry are just a notch below those four guys, at least this season. But, you know, it's interesting to see. We're going to see Bradley Beal two more times this season.
Yep.
We don't play the Celtics again, but we could see him in the playoffs. We're probably going to see one of those three guys, Kyrie, Bradley Beal, or DeMar DeRozan, in the playoffs. They play the Raptors again this season. So something to look at, because if Vic really kind of separates himself as one of the best four guards in the Eastern Conference, it makes the Pacers more of a attractive free agent destination. I know they're not always going to be one, but it makes it, you know, another guard, another small forward, like, hey, I want to play with Vic because he's like the unselfish, you know, superstar out there, and he looks really fun to play with.
Yeah, definitely. You know, all those other guys, you know, Lowry and DeRozan share the backcourt, and Wall and Beal share the backcourt, and, you know, Kyrie's eventually going to share it with Gordon Hayward. Like, they all have somebody else with them except for Vic. And Kemba. Hey, they match made in heaven right now.
Well, Vic is also the kind of guy who seems like he's only taking like 20 shots because he's like forced to in some sense.
He took like 53 shots the last two games. He's chucking.
But it seems like it's because the team is sort of like saying, hey, Vic, we trust you more than anybody else. Versus like, you know, I feel like at times like DeRozan just keeps shooting because he wants to be the shooter. Kyrie kind of the same way. Kyrie's a little better than that, but it just feels like at times Vic is like, oh, he has 20 shots. Like, it doesn't seem like he really takes that many, or he's like wants to take that many. He just kind of does.
Yeah. And maybe I think in the regular season, you could argue Oladipo is the best of the group, but come playoff time and it's like the game's slower and the defense is better and it's clamped down and it's go get me a bucket, I think Kyrie's the best guard in the East.
Oh yeah. Well, Kyrie has the track record. I mean, he was awesome last year in the playoffs.
History.
He also was been, I mean, if you were to take playoffs into account, he's probably been a top five player the past two seasons.
Yeah, I mean,
he's been incredible. He was the only player on the Cavs in the Warriors series the past two seasons who I thought literally who actually scared the Warriors besides LeBron. You know, it seemed like it would always be like Steph, Clay, and Draymond, and then versus LeBron. But then Kyrie sort of pushed his way into it's LeBron and Kyrie are an awesome duo.
Exactly. I really can't say, like, the playoffs are a different game, but yeah, Kyrie just has so many skills that no one else has.
But if
it's hard for you to not pick him, but Vic did outplay him this week.
Yeah, and if Vic can translate that into a playoff series win, which would be an unexpected for the Pacers and an exceeding their goal, it could definitely push the Pacers into that level. Like, oh, this is a team that has cap space. They're young. They've got this superstar who people seem to like and is unselfish and seems to embrace this whole Indiana thing. Like, it could be really good for the future of the team and bring in another name, because the Pacers seem like they're one player away from really being competitive, like a really competitive team. So it's something to look for, at least.
You know who they're not going to play in the first round of the playoffs?
Who? I'm trying to think.
The Brooklyn Nets.
That is true, and so that's what we're going to talk about next. All right, well, that was a lovely transition by Tony. I have to give him a shout-out for that one. That was a great setup. I was waiting for him to try. I was trying to figure out how to do it, and he set me up perfectly. So the Pacers
had it for you.
Yeah, you did. It was great. I was like trying to see if you would stop. Whatever. It worked. The Pacers' next game is on Wednesday against the Brooklyn Nets. Tony teased it earlier. The last time we'll have to see the Nets, just seeing them to start the season.
Sweep. Get out the brooms.
Yeah, it would be good because, last season they didn't sweep them, right? Didn't they lose twice to them last season?
They lost them one time.
Maybe it's two years they lost twice. It'll be good. It's good to sweep a team like the Nets because it's the team you should beat, and it's good when you beat teams you should beat. It shows that you're
– here's a random tidbit from this game.
Go ahead.
Of the 26 players who will suit up, 10 of them went to either Michigan, Texas, or UCLA.
So that means like 3-3-4.
3-3-4.
That's
a lot of UCLA. I don't know. It's very condensed. It's rare.
I guess. I'm sure if you went to the Oklahoma City might have that kind of thing too with Russ and somebody else.
Yeah, Jared Allen and Corey Joseph and Miles Turner were Texas, and then Michigan's got Caris LeVert and Glenn Robinson and Nick Stauskas, and then UCLA's got EK and Darren, and I forgot Quincy AC at Texas, and then EK and Darren and TJ at UCLA. Pretty crazy.
Well, it's because the Pacers have three guys from UCLA on their team. That helps.
I know.
Make anything work. do you have the numbers of the Brooklyn Nets right up?
I do have the numbers of the Brooklyn Nets in front of me. They are 6th in pace, 24th in offense, and 23rd in defense. They're 19-38, so that is not very good.
That is not very good.
They lost five in a row, but they are playing tonight. They might be playing right now.
They are playing right now. They also gave up 138 points against the.
They literally just lost, like just now. 114-101, they lost to the Clippers.
Well, they've given up 123 now, 115, 138, now 114 in the last four games.
Yikes.
They're lucky. They have the return of D'Angelo Russell. He returned, I think, five games ago now. This might have been the sixth one he played. Recording is on a Monday, so it'd be on Monday night. They will be without Chris LeVer and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. It seems like both those guys are hurt, have not played in, I think, two games now.
Once you don't play two games before the All-Star break, they're just going to hold you out through it.
That's what I was saying. They would probably just say, let's go to the All-Star break. You can sit out for one more night. Kind of thing. Their best player, probably my butcher, is going to be Spencer Dinwiddie. He's been playing awesome. The emergence of him has been crazy. The Cavs, funny end, the Cavs apparently tried to trade for him, which would make sense in two sentences. One, it helped their team, and two, it make the Nets worse, helping their pick.
Yeah.
Shout out to Brian Windhorst, reported that.
I'm sure that was the strategy. What makes Dinwiddie so actually scary against the Pacers? I mean, he was good in their most recent game, the one that went to overtime in Indiana. He's 6'6", and he's still so athletic and fast. And, that is the recipe against Collison to dominate. I know Joseph will be a lot better on him. But, you know, that combo of speed and, you know, his shot's kind of falling off. But that combo of speed and athleticism is just really hard to find a 6'6 player.
Yeah, I actually went to the last Pacers-Nets game. I think he did a nice job drawing this foul, hitting a three and getting a four-point play, basically to tie the game, I think, with, 20 or 30 seconds left. I've been really impressed with Dinwiddie just because he was so far out of the league, basically. He was on his last leg, and he
literally
made this resurgence. And it's cool to see because it also means the Nets are probably have something going well. Like their culture is they're getting it back. You know, for a while the Nets were like this just desolate team you go to because they're willing to pay you a lot of money kind of thing. And now it seems like they might have some, oh, we know I develop young guys. We're getting guys back in the league. You know, Russell has been playing better. I know he was hurt, but he, you know, had a nice little start to the season. So it's good to see, because you hate to see when NBA teams are just terrible. Like, much as I don't want them to compete with the Pacers, I hate seeing NBA teams just be perpetually bad for like decades.
It just, the process was awful. I hated it.
It's sad. It's just sad to watch. I mean, like a team like the Nets, and then there, I know when I throw in like the Magic, just sad to watch a team be that bad for so many years. Cause it's not, I feel bad for the families, cause it's like, it just sucks. It just honestly sucks.
I agree. And it's great for Dinwiddie too. You know, he got traded for Cameron Bairstow like 2 years ago. Who the heck is Cameron Bairstow?
Couldn't tell you one stat about him. I couldn't even tell you what position he plays. Couldn't tell you.
Exactly. He's a center, but then, you know, 2 years later, he'd be scoring 26 and 8 assists against the Pacers, you know, and starting on a team. Like, he's a quality player, and you got to give him credit for that improvement. And he was going to be my butcher too, so I'm glad you segued like that, because he's like, I mean, they have Jared Allen's been playing really well since he started starting. I just learned that today. And then, you know, they have some like, okay guys, like Russell had a huge first game, but the injury kind of changed the way he plays this year. But, you know, they don't have like a world beater on offense besides him. You know, he creates a lot of what they do. They have some okay defensive players this year, but he's the only offensive guy.
He also has the triggers to be able to, like, the coaching staff gives him the ability just to shoot whenever he wants. I mean, he took 22 shots on Saturday. But for Jared Allen, real quick, you should actually look this up. I don't know if you saw it. He had this really weird free throw in the Clippers on Monday. He shot this free throw that spun around like three times. I saw it on Twitter before we started recording. It was really funny. I think if you haven't seen it yet, you guys should go check that out. It was a funny video. It spun like four times around before dropping in, and Jared Allen always, you know, he has that big afro. He looks like kind of like just like looks like a guy, an old NBA player. He looks like a guy out of the 80s, and it's really kind of funny just to watch him like kind of like do a dance to see it go in. But
you think him and Turner are gonna have that that Texas center dap before the game?
I wonder that. I was kind of waiting for who's the guy in Texas now? Bamba, the three of them. Bamba, kind of, like 3 straight years they've drafted out of Texas, or 3 or 4 years, whatever. Like these great centers been drafted out of Texas. That's cool. Kind of cool.
And now a bunch of big guys will be like, oh, I should go to Texas.
Maybe. I mean, maybe that's why Allen went there. Maybe that's why the Bamba kid goes there now, because of all that. Like, I call him the kid, you know, he's like 1 year younger than me. but looking towards the Pacers side of things, obviously they'll be without Collison. We touched that already. My probably X factor for the Pacers is probably going to be Corey Joseph, because he's going to guard Dinwiddie. And that's kind of where the Pacers kind of almost lost it last time, was not being able to stop Dinwiddie. But also Vic has been incredible against them. I think he had 38 points the last time they played. The first game of the season, I think he maybe only had like 21 or 23, but he's just been really good against them.
Are we going to see a Bojan revenge game?
Bojan played for so many two teams, I guess, the Washington Wizards and the Nets. I mean that's what Monday was, right? He was a revenge game against the Wizards.
Revenge game, 29 points. But against the Brooklyn Nets this year, Bojan has had 17 points, 14 points, and 9 points, and he's been a positive in all three games. But he hasn't had his revenge game yet. I think it's a Bojan game. You know, Damari Carroll is a really good defender, but if Bojan can keep shooting like he has been, no defender can stop him. And you know, if you keep the Nets' best defender out of the game by just lighting him up, that'll just make things easy for everybody else.
So I think Bojan has some reasonable has a reason to be mad at the Wizards, because I think he thought they were going to pay him and they didn't.
I agree.
But I don't know if he had any reason to be mad at the Nets.
No.
They traded him
when he was expiring. That's a smart idea.
Yeah, and they traded him to a playoff team who had to play in the playoffs. Like,
I know, but any old game, it's fun to say revenge game.
I know.
Any young revenge game, too.
But, like, I think legitimately there is some bad blood between Bojan and the Wizards. I don't think Bojan thinks that bad blood against the Nets. But maybe returning to Brooklyn will jog some memories. I don't know.
Yeah, well, he didn't do too hot in the first time there. But yeah, Thad Young, too. It's fun to watch Caris LeVert, also, the guy that they drafted in the Thad Young trade pick, just to see what he's like. But I think that's what, you know, everyone likes to declare winners, and you'll hear this exact quote from me on our Nets preview podcast, but you know, that was like a win-win trade. You know, Thad's been huge for the Pacers, and LeVert's been a good young guy for the Nets.
Almost like the win-win of the George Hill Kawhi Leonard trade back in the day. In the hindsight, you know, at one point it's a win-win, but in 2 or 3 years it could not be. No, I was going to ask you, but if you previewed already, I don't want to steal the thunder from your Wednesday show.
Oh, that was a question. I'll tell you if I can answer it or not.
Well, it was going to be, looking back on that trade, What's your thoughts? The Pacers win, lose, negative, but you kind of gave it away, but you probably got more depth.
You'll hear more comments and from Annette's perspective on it tomorrow.
Yeah. So I don't want to steal your thunder there. Let's do the score real quick. We probably both have the Nets losing. Question is how much?
It's going to be a weird game. The last game before the All-Star break just is a weird game, you know? Like, guys are looking ahead and they're playing a bad, crappy Nets team. And I don't know. I don't think they're going to be like super up for it until they're losing. So maybe it'll be closer, but I think they win 103-96.
That's a good score. You are right, though. They will probably be looking towards a lot of the guys looking towards their Caribbean vacation or wherever they're going. Remember, these guys have a lot of money, so they can go on a whim to wherever they want to go, basically. Probably, I think they probably have off from that game until the weekend, and then they have to come back probably Monday for practice or Tuesday, that range. I don't know the exact schedule. I don't think it's released, but you're right. They're probably thinking about their Bahama vacation and going with their girlfriends or whatever to their wives to the beach. So you're probably right. I think it's probably closer than it should be. It's probably a 10-point win, maybe 15 if they get worried. But I don't think they ever like are in trouble. I think it's just a kind of like a little bit closer than comfort. Let's put it that way. So let's go 105-90.
I like it. Yeah, I think it. I think the win. I just don't think it'll be like a comfortable victory.
Yeah, this is actually the kind of game where you're going to need Lance to sort of like keep the energy going.
Yes, I agree.
Because he's the one guy who probably isn't going anywhere because he loves Indiana. So just going home, probably definitely going home to Indiana because he loves the place. We all know he does. He loves Indiana. It's just like his favorite place on earth. So he's going back there. And he's the kind of guy who like on these annoying nights, like these nights where it doesn't matter, like people are trying to like half play, where he like just goes 110%. Like that, he just goes all out and pisses everybody off, and shows everybody up. But it's fine if he can do that; it'll be fine.
He's from the area too.
Oh right, he's a New York guy. I mean, I don't know if that. I think Madison Square Garden is more of his mecca than
It is.
Than Brooklyn, but it's what it is. I guess he is kind of going to his original home where he's from. So I think his parents moved with him back to Indy because they love Indianapolis. I'm telling you, they love it, or wherever they live. They live in Carmel, but they love the Indiana area.
Oh, they live in Zionsville.
Yeah. Live in Zionsville. I've seen it. You see his house on Snap or Instagram or one. Yeah, Instagram. Yep. And I mean, it looks like it's probably in Zionsville. Carmel's my guess. So you are right.
We meant nothing by that.
No, we meant nothing by that. That wasn't meant to be any. Tony's from Zionsville. My parents now live in Carmel. All you Carmel Zionsville people, don't get mad at me, even though I really wouldn't be that scared of you guys. Tony, what are you writing this week?
Always the positional stuff will come up. I don't know specifics yet. Yesterday it will have been what has looked different without Darren. Everything else I just kind of decide that day. Just be on the lookout for that. Be on the lookout for that Reggie Miller thing and always check out stuff like that.
Yep. I'm going to be writing about Miles Turner. That'll probably post tomorrow or Wednesday. For the rest of the week, so this podcast is posted on Tuesday. Tony's got you for a Grizzlies preview on Wednesday. Nets. And I've got who did you speak to?
Nets preview. Come on.
Did I say Grizzlies?
You did.
I wrote because this is last week's schedule in my head. Who do you have on for the Nets preview?
Nicholas Letourneau from SB Nation's Nets Daily.
Okay. Just so you know, the Nets and Grizzlies are just as irrelevant as teams together. They are. I mean, we're being honest. Thursday, I'll have you with the review of the game and a little maybe preview into the All-Star weekend. Then Tony has a special guest for Friday. We'll let him talk about that later. He'll probably post it on Twitter. And then we'll be back on the weekend to do a podcast on the All-Star break, probably previewing the All-Star game, talking about one of the dunk contest where Vic's going to be in it. We probably won't get the Rising Stars Challenge, but we'll see when we record it. Then we'll be back again on Monday to do some stuff. And then next week, we're going to do some kind of mailbag. So
look out.
Yeah, look out for a tweet from me and Tony from the Locked On Pacers show. As always, Tony is at TEastNBA on Twitter. I'm at FriedmanAdam5. Look out for something that says send questions here. We'll try to hit as many as we can. And when we do, we'll also tweet out who we answered. And if we didn't answer your question, it's because it wasn't a good question. Sorry. That's it for today's Locked On Pacers podcast. Like I said, we'll be back again tomorrow. So have a great rest of your day.